Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Erica Weitz, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Shut up. Chef family. Short and hot with Chef family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 63.
Joining me, as always, in the studio is my super producer, Anne. Hi, Anne.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I hear you have a little frog in your throat.
I do. He's been hanging around for a few weeks.
I have finally kicked mine, and I went to the New York Botanical Garden this weekend with friends who also have a daughter who is James's age, and super we were cute. All crossing our fingers because no one was sick. There were five adults and two children, and no one was sick, which has been unheard of. We've canceled like four plans because at some point everyone's had something contagious.
Yeah, this has been, I mean, people are getting knocked out all over.
It's
See, I like wasn't sick, and I had gotten better, and then I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for a run. I'm just going to go up to the park. That was a bad idea, guys. Don't do that.
Because don't go for a run.
Not the day after you're feeling better, because it was like, yeah, we're going to take out your lungs now. So now it's just a little cough, but.
You want to hear a gross story about my failed run this morning?
Definitely.
Okay, this is also about having a toddler. So our guest today is Chad Cotter. He's going to come on with the line with us briefly, and I want to ask him about, he is a mushroom farmer, and he teaches people how to cultivate mushrooms at home. And in his book, he's got a whole chapter about cultivating mushrooms on chicken manure. Mm. And the listeners of the show know that I have a flock of chickens at home. And so this morning, James and I were outside, and he loves to fill the bird feeder. So I take them out of the tree, I give him a core container, and he fills them up. I bundled him up, got him into the car seat, and we drove to what we lovingly call, well, it's called the Boulevard, but where I live, because it's fairly rural, you have to drive to a sidewalk to walk on. So there's like a sidewalk with like little pods of parking spots along it so that people can walk. Mm. It's a weird place that I live in, and I don't always love it. But we do have this 2 mile long stretch that you can do 2 miles out and 2 miles back, and it's a really nice long run. And we're getting to the parking lot that we park in, and James is in. I'm talking to my father on the phone, on the Bluetooth, not on my cell phone. I don't talk and drive.
Safety
but
first.
Safety first, but on the Bluetooth. And James is in the back seat, and I hear him going, ew, ew. And this is his new thing, and I think it's really cute. And sometimes it's something, sometimes it's not. And I turn around, and he's holding out to me a chicken poop.
Oh.
And I have no idea where it came from or how long he's been holding on to it.
He's like, this is just in my pocket, Mom.
I swear, I don't know. And then, so I stop, I pull over, I get to our parking spot, I pull over, and I do not have any wipes in the car. No baby wipes. I've been doing this for more than 2 years. You would think that by this point I'd have the mom
Carry
thing
baby.
Down. Mm. Nope, apparently not. So I had some tissues and a half bottle of Pellegrino. That's I got him kind of cleaned up, but our run was thwarted because I had to go home and like sanitize all of us.
Yeah, the bubbles didn't just quite do it, huh?
So the fact that I made it out of today without, you know, I may not have made it out of this run without getting sick again. Let's just put it that way.
Gotcha. Unscathed. We're here. Showing up.
So I wanted to invite the listeners to tweet us questions. If you are an at-home mushroom grower or an aspirational mushroom farmer in your yard or in your apartment, we're going to try to take some live questions. I have a couple of questions already in the queue. And additionally, if you are not already a member of Heritage Radio Network, through Sunday of this week, Fairway Market is going to generously match listener contributions up to $7,500. So if you've been like, oh yeah, I totally have to do that. I have to become a member, and you haven't done it yet, do it this week and your dollars will go twice as far. Go to heritageradionetwork.org, click the donate button. Student members get stickers. $120 membership gets you our brand new design pizza bag, and a $250 premium membership gets you your choice of a subscription to either Cherry Bomb or Orion Magazine. And don't forget the Charity Buzz is auctioning off the one of a kind lifetime culinary experiences, including learning to do fish butchery at Le Bernardin.
Yeah.
So if you want to have a really excellent teacher to show you how to bone out a fish with a really sharp knife, I highly recommend bidding on that through Charity Buzz and Search Heritage Radio Network. And it's the end of the year. You can still write it off on your 2014 taxes, which, as a grown-up who now has an accountant, I feel like I should make sure people know that, because I feel proud of my financial decisions this year.
Amen.
So, okay, without any further ado, let's get Trag Cotter on the line with us, author of Organic Mushroom Farming and Micro Remediation. Hi, Trad.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. Welcome to Sharp and Hot.
Thank you for having me so much.
So I have a very basic question for you. Where are we talking to you from? Where are you based?
I'm at the upstate South Carolina. So it's up near Greenville, if anybody knows where the foothills are, in the upstate South Carolina, the northwest corner.
So you are a little bit famous, I have to say. When I put this up on Facebook, a couple of my gardener and horticulturist friends were like, oh my God, I love him.
I'm blushing over the phone.
So how did you become interested in mushroom farming? What was your what's your origin story?
Okay, I'll give you the edited version. Would be that I was hired as a walk-in to a mushroom farm when I was 19 years old. I really didn't know anything about them, and I was interested in eating them a little bit, but I really didn't know anything about them in particular to growing them, or you know, the varieties that you could eat. So I basically just eating white button mushrooms and didn't even know what a portobello was. So I just kind of got hired and pulled in, and I was really fascinated by it. And as soon as I was hired, I mean, I was addicted to them. So when I left that farm, I felt like I went through withdrawals, you know?
Right. And you tell a funny story about how the farmer chased you out, right, and banged on the trunk of your car?
True story. I mean, it's so funny. And I look back at that, and, you know, for all the listeners, you know, I just was walking. I did a tour, and I walked out, and I had this clunker of a car, and, you know, I just drove off. And it was a dirt road, and it was all dusty, and I heard this loud bang, and I thought I had blew a tire. True story. And then the dust settles, and the owner is standing there at my window panting, and he's like, do you want a job? And I was just like... in shock. And so that was it. I mean, and I think back to that, this is before cell phones, you know, were common. And, you know, had my car been a little bit better, I wouldn't be here. So, you know, it's just a nice twist of fate.
And so you took a job working there. And I have to say, we have sort of a similar introduction to mushrooms. I remember when I was a kid and portobellos and baby bellas first became available in the supermarket. And my parents were like, oh, we got these gourmet mushrooms, because they were just the first thing that was a different that was available to us.
Yeah, I remember the owner of the farm saying, well, you got to try these portobellos. And I went to the store and they were just like, they were 8 inches across. You know, they looked like mutants.
Right.
And I was just amazed. Like, I'd never seen anything like that before. And then quickly, we just became, you know, me in the Southeast, I just started growing as many different types of mushrooms as I could. You know, it was fascinating.
So for people who want to try cultivating mushrooms at home, you've published this book, which is incredibly thorough, and it has photographs and drawings on almost every page that explain the whole process. But can you give me sort of the basic setup for how one goes about growing something simple? And you say in the book that shiitakes or oyster mushrooms are a good place to start.
Sure. And I would never change that. There's what I call the training wheels mushrooms.
Okay. You know,
there's different levels of cultivation, and some of them they're just not that difficult. They just might take longer. And for someone who's a beginner, you know, patience is a factor. So they're a little bit different than plants. And oyster mushrooms are almost foolproof. They will cultivate themselves. Shiitake mushrooms are very simple on logs. And, you know, that's what I would set up a beginner, is with a couple different species of the beginning mushroom. Shiitakes on logs, let's say oyster mushrooms on, you know, paper, cardboard, or waste indoors. And then there's also King Stropharia, which is a wonderful mushroom that grows in your landscape, you know, on wood chips. So, you don't even have to do anything but just spread the spawn out into wood chips around your garden.
So my husband and I tried growing a mushroom log in our Jersey City apartment once, and it did nothing for like 2 years. It did nothing except collect dust and take up space. And I periodically would ask him if I could please just throw it out. And he was like, no, don't throw it. Just leave it. I'm taking care of it. Just leave it. And then one morning we woke up and it was completely covered in shiitake mushrooms. Complete, like overnight. It was incredible.
Yeah. And it takes time, because when you plant something like that, you know, mushrooms are like little colonists. You know, when you plant spawn, it takes time for them to take over and occupy that new territory, which would be the log. And then it's a question of moisture and the right temperature. So I've had a lot of stories where people just kind of, they don't, I guess they would kind of give up. But when you basically put a mushroom outdoors and you give it everything it wants and it gets rained on, it responds. So I think a lot of the book is about understanding what a mushroom, you know, how a mushroom thinks, how it operates. And, you know, I really try to get inside of the brains of a fungus.
You
maybe,
do.
Maybe
you,
I've gone too far.
No, but you do make these sort of analogous relationships between the way mushrooms operate and the way the human body and the human mind operate. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard once that what a mushroom sort of underground, because what we think of as a mushroom is like a fruit equivalent, right?
Right.
And so the mushroom itself grows underground in sort of a web that I have heard mimics both the shape of the neurons in the human brain and also the internet. Is that true?
Yeah, they do have some similarities between nodes and the math and how they stream nutrients and water to their tips, you know, where the mushrooms might be going. There is some kind of a chemical awareness, you know, consciousness that, and even plants have this as well, but fungi are very quick to react. That's why I treat them like, you know, I try to get inside the minds of them and teach them as if they were, you know, like as if they were someone you knew, you know, because they react very quickly to stimuli, and they're extremely efficient, and they will do whatever's in their best interest to make a mushroom, because a mushroom is a defense mechanism, like a fruit body, and it happens when it's under stress, and water is the limiting factor. So your little log sitting indoors, you know, it might have got a little bit of extra water that, you know, that week before it flushed, or the temperature was just right and it was happy. And so, you know, it's all about timing. And you know how timing is. It's very important in a relationship. So you've got to time it right. And if it misses its opportunity, it's just going to sit there and rest, and it's going to wait for the next chance. So they're extremely patient. You know, I think people can learn a lot from them.
So you have a photograph of collecting spores from a particular mushroom cap that in the book, it looks like what I would recognize as a portobello mushroom. And you've taken the cap and kind of gotten it to release its spores onto a sheet of aluminum foil. And so you said that the mushroom fruits when it's under stress, because the thing that we eat is its survival mechanism, right? Like, is its desire to reproduce and survive elsewhere as its spores get taken away on the wind, correct?
That is correct. And the mycelium, which is that network, that web-like network you were talking about, that is that group or collection of cells. It's one organism, but they just keep radiating out, looking for more and more and more food until they hit a barrier or they run out of food, and that's when they produce the mushroom to produce the spores that would just kind of drift off, you know, like tumbleweeds, and they're looking for more wood or mulch. You know, they're looking for a new planet. You know, they're ejecting out into the atmosphere, and they're looking for new real estate. So it's a wonderful thing to kind of follow how a mushroom, whenever you see a mushroom form, or whenever you see it even in the wild, you know, it can take, for many of the mushrooms, it takes two spores to land, to germinate, and then they have to find each other and then mate to produce another body of, you know, the vegetative culture to produce another mushroom. So there's this whole dating game going on out in the woods, you know?
It's just so fascinating. And because they are not an animal, right? And they are not technically a plant, right?
No, not at all. You know, they don't produce chlorophyll, but they do photosynthesize in a non-classical sense. So they do use light radiation or wavelengths of light. They're phototropic, so they bend to light. They're very fond of light. So that's a myth busted, is, you know, mushrooms grow in the dark. Most of them need light to produce their colors and their pigments. You know, their pigments are the foundation of all the vitamin D and the protein that they produce. So they are very similar to animals. You know, they create heat, they create carbon dioxide, and they exude water just like humans do or animals do. So we're kind of a fungus or a mushroom inverted, if you would. You know, the mushroom stomach is on the outside and ours are on the inside. So that's why I make these similarities. You know, we have very similar situations.
So what are some of the ways that mushrooms can be used in micro remediation? Like, what are some of the messes they can clean up?
I'll start with the top, the corporate. Everyone would think of the first thing you'd think of would be like an oil spill. You know, those are the ones that are on the TV and the radio. Happen every single day. Pesticide runoff, that's a big one. From not just pesticide, but fertilizer runoff from our agricultural systems is huge.
So we can mushrooms will eat fertilizers and oil?
Of course, yeah. They're extremely efficient in breaking down fertilizers, immobilizing the phosphates, the runoff before they get into our watersheds. So I heard you in the introduction talk about your chicken coop, and
yeah.
someone might have chickens at home. But what we don't think about is when we do get a rain event, even the homeowners who have cats and, you know, specifically dogs, dogs have a higher coliform per gram rate than a chicken does. So that runoff goes into the watershed. And what a homeowner or a farmer could do is just set up a very simple wood chip bed as a barrier that the water would have to flow through before it gets into the creeks and the streams and the lakes. So that's a very simple way of, you know, allowing a planted bed, which could be edible mushrooms, you're just putting it as a very, very effective barrier between your pollution and the watershed. And that water has to flow through that body of mycelium, you know, that network. And the more time it has contact with that mushroom mycelium, the more it can break down those fertilizers, or it'll kill the coli. You know, there's a lot of different things going on there.
I'm fascinated that, so I grew up on the east end of Long Island, which is commonly called, referred to as the Hamptons, and my father was a commercial fisherman, so I hate to tell people that I'm from the Hamptons, but out there, people with a lot of money have houses right on the ocean, and they put amazing amounts of fertilizer down to have green lawns that literally run right onto the beach, and it's incredible that there could be a requirement, or at least an incentive to put some kind of filter between that and the salt marsh, which is the nursery of the ocean. It's incredible that there's not something like that.
And that's one of my passions is, you know, after the oil spill, you know, we've kind of mobilized our team here, and I don't know what y'all were doing, you know, did y'all remember watching that on the TV when the oil cap, they couldn't cap it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was like billowing, and I think I lost sleep for like 2 weeks because I would just wake up in the middle of the night and then turn on that live feed and just watch it, and it was just bothering me, and because there was nobody could do anything.
Yeah.
And then my wife and I, Olga, put out a flyer, and I said, listen, you know, if mushrooms are really good at breaking down oil, you know, this mess, but the problem is, you know, there's salt-tolerant fungi, you know, we can't get the two together. So we started collecting and asking, putting out a public service report, or a most wanted poster, actually, a Western poster with mushrooms on it. And it said, if you want to help the oil spill, anyone can help if you spot a mushroom along the beach. And because those are the strains, you know, the mushroom types that we need to clone and then plant back in large numbers along these estuaries that are contaminated. So we're looking for specific mushrooms along these beaches that can be useful in, you know, for a future event, because there will be another one.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
So we're just trying to use our time now in between to make these models and to practice and to find these mushrooms that we can put back in the event of the next, you know, the next tragedy, to make it more efficient.
So you're asking people, like, as they're walking along, you know, just for an afternoon walk, if they spot a mushroom, to collect it and send it to you?
Absolutely. Take pictures first, collect them, and dry them room temperature. And we can clone a mushroom up to a year old. Mushrooms can stay alive for a year. Dried.
That's fascinating.
And
that's really cool.
All we would need would be, we just need one specimen, and we can open it up, clone it, and we can make millions of them from one. And what we're looking for also is there are native species. You know, we're not bringing anything from, you know, Asia or Europe. You know, we're looking for things along the beach. For instance, someone sent me some mushrooms from the Outer Banks. Mushrooms, gilled mushrooms growing right out of the wet sand at high tide.
Wow.
Now, I've never seen anything like that, and I've been doing this for 22 years. So mushrooms are they're there. They will find if there's a food source, which would be dune grass or driftwood, mango tree, you know, anything. But we're looking, you know, probably for me the most critical species we're looking for is salt tolerant fungi.
I grew up walking on the bay and the ocean. I don't think I've ever, or maybe I didn't know what I was looking at. Do they look like a mushroom that you would recognize as a mushroom?
It might not even be a gilled mushroom. It could be a mold. It could be something that's, you know, discolored or powdery. And I know a lot of focus is on mushrooms because they're large and, you know, we can identify with eating them and, you know, we have a history of them. But, you know, there's 1.5 million species of just fungi, which are mostly molds. So I'm trying to get out of my box and take my blinders off and look at more of these molds. But the mushrooms are easy to find. They're easy to clone. They're easy to work with. And if someone does spot something, you know, unusual mushroom growing out of a saline or salt environment, those would be ideal. And see, that's citizen science. That's us as a community trying to solve a problem.
I love that. I feel like people are always asking, you know, what can I do? And like, here you go. And I like that phrase.
Join the mushroom
science.
Army, you know?
Yeah, very cool. There.
Tell me about the work that you've done in Haiti.
Haiti was wonderful. Would love to go back. We're trying to get back down there this coming summer. We went down there to set up a, you know, preliminary mushroom site, a cultivation learning center at, I believe the name is Corporon. It's near the city of Conge. It's in the mountains. And I spent a whole week down there educating. It's a horticultural institute where students are allowed to, they get a certificate, and they're taught different horticultural trades, and my job was to teach mushrooms for a whole week. So what I taught down there was something that I teach in the book. I know it's in the chapter called Shrooming Off the Grid, which is down there in Haiti, and it doesn't matter where you are. It's actually a chapter on how to grow mushrooms on anything, anywhere in the world, whether it's, you know, in the Southamptons or Kansas or Haiti. You know, you can grow, if you read some of these chapters and you understand how mushrooms work, you can, even without a laboratory, you can clone mushrooms with cardboard. You can expand that into making your own spawn, and eventually you could grow, you know, hundreds if not millions of pounds of mushrooms in a very remote location. And so for me, I saw that as an opportunity to bring, you know, protein, a source of protein after the earthquake. And there's still hundreds of thousands of, you know, refugees still living in camps, you know?
Right.
So, which it's, you know, the CNN has turned to the next story, but what we're seeing is, you know, it hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the relief is dried up. You know, the grain is gone that we sent. And, you know, we're looking for a more permanent solution. So, you know, my focus was to create these little mushroom, I call them mushroom rescue modules, but they're... there are these stacked containers that can fruit mushrooms on paper and cardboard and, you know, bits of clothing that wash up or is just lying around. And you can grow mushrooms on just about anything like that, just waste. And then once the mushrooms fruit, we can use those. You can pour water and filter the water. So there's a multi-levels of use for that kind of system, and I think Haiti needs it the most.
Are you associated with a not-for-profit, or are you guys doing this on your own?
We are doing it on our own.
So, that's really incredible.
Yeah, right at the moment, we've got a new facility down here. It's beautiful. The lab is just, I sound like a nerd now. The lab is just gorgeous. And
we're all nerds.
We're all nerds.
You're good company.
Yeah, good company.
I can't stop looking at it. And we're at a different level now. And, you know, it's been 20 years. And now I really think we've found, you know, you know, I look back at that car that was, you know, I was driving away, and that owner, and I look at us now, and it's just amazing. And I want everybody to have that opportunity, to have that feeling, you know, that growing mushrooms, whether it's in your backyard or if you want to do what I'm doing, and do some research, it's just I'm never cease to be amazed by what mushrooms can do, because I could keep you here on the phone for an hour. And you just won't believe some of the stuff we're working on. You know, it's just amazing.
Well, I will ask you a question that Sarah from Raleigh, North Carolina, who says you are her hero, ask him how he got to be so freaking awesome. she also wants to know how your fungi fire ant poison is coming along.
Well, I would tell her that, and everyone listening, that we have found route collecting mushrooms all the time. And to fill in the rest of the story is, we're photographing some mushrooms up here in the mountains, and we spotted this tiny little hair-like structure growing out of a log, and I've never seen anything like it before. So we opened up the log, and there was a fully mummified carpenter ant, a very large one, with these threads growing out of her head. And it turned out to be a cordyceps mushroom. And so we cloned that culture coming out of there, out of the ant. We sent the ant to Harvard, and there was an expert there that said this is a cordyceps, so it's very target-specific to a very narrow bandwidth of ants. And so, I kept the culture for about a year, and we had these fire ants. Y'all don't know what fire ants are up there, do you?
My sister-in-law lives in Birmingham, so I know about it through her, but we are blessed to be fire ant-free up here.
You are. I'll send you some. How about that?
No, thank you.
Okay. You sure?
Not unless
Christmas
they're
coming.
Not unless they're dipped in chocolate.
No. All right, no. You don't want them. So we had some ants, fire ants. We're organic farmers, and when we do our personal garden, and there was fire ants everywhere. So we had this culture. We found it here as native, and I captured some of the ants, and we dosed them. And within 24 hours, they had basically left the building. They left. And 6 to 7 days later, now in my galleries, and I'll tell the listeners that, we have fire ants. I make fire ant farms, and we make it, like little fire ant or ant farms for children.
Right.
We make fire ant farms, but we don't send them to children. But we dose them. So I'll just let everybody know that, just a couple days ago, I dosed these fire ants with the fungus that we had, and they were completely mummified in 6 to 7 days. And what that fungus does is it drills into the ant right through their armor and mummifies them and gets up into their brain, and it starts to steer them around like a remote control.
Weird.
Until mushrooms pop out of their heads,
And are they steering the ant that they have colonized towards other ants for more food?
Are they steering towards them, or?
Well, you said they are like controlling the ant, or is the ant just like how are they moving them around?
This is what's interesting. The ants, so they're still alive and they're mummified. So they call them zombie ants, and they're basically the fungus is steering them around to where the ants next, or the fungus. The mushroom's next food source is. So it's like driving a horse to water, and it's really odd. And we have a couple species here where the ants actually are forced to climb trees, and then they climb the tree, they bite onto a branch, and then the mushroom pops out the back of their head, and the mushroom drops its spores all over those little ant highways. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah.
So they figured out this year it's that specific that the fungus makes the ant climb, pick a branch, not randomly, but go out on this branch, and then aim that mushroom straight down over the interstate where all the other ants are trying to move to and fro. So it's like a dirty bomb. I mean, it's just amazing.
That's incredible. And you say in your book that leafcutter ants actually cultivate fungus for their own consumption?
They do. They ferment it. Some up by chewing them, bringing them underground, specific leaves, and then they'll feed on the fungus. They'll call it a fungal, like a fungus garden. And so they'll use that for some of their, little larval food. And the queen, the new queens that come out of that colony will carve out a little tiny little pellet, and she has a special little cavity in her abdomen specifically designed to hold one little pellet of that mushroom culture, like a friendship bread culture, that someone would have given you. And she flies away and starts a new colony with that one tiny little piece. So that's amazing that, and that's the kind of the analogy I draw between the opening chapter and the rest of the book. You could be that ant,
Right.
You could take this, you could take a small amount and do a lot with it.
So cool.
The book is called Organic Mushroom Farming and Micro Remediation. Trad Cotter, how do people find you? Do you have a website?
Yes, we are at mushroommountain.com. Mushroom Mountain, very interpretive site, lots of videos and lots of information, how-tos and everything. And you can reach me through the site.
Excellent. And are you on Twitter and Facebook?
I am on Twitter. I don't tweet very much. I tweet when I'm out, like finding infected ants and crickets and things. So I tweet fun things.
That's awesome. So, cool. I might have you back on next year for Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally. I'll make it creepy.
That would be awesome.
Such a badass show. Thanks, Chris.
But you all can also reach me on the conference schedule. So check Chelsea Green's and our. I am lecturing, I think, every weekend from January to June on the East Coast. So I'm everywhere.
All right. Awesome. We will put links up to that on sharpenhot.com. Trag Cotter, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Have me back.
Thanks.
Next week, Hans Rockenwagner will teach me to make Kaiserschmarrn on the radio, and I'm going to ask him if he has a recipe for Pfeffernuss, because I am obsessed with this cookie. It is a German spice cookie that's available usually only around Christmas time, and my go-to box of Trader Joe's this year says may contain trace amounts of peanuts, which I cannot have in the house because of James, and they are not delicious enough, and I can't explain to a toddler why he can't have a cookie and I can. So I'm going to ask him for that. In the meantime, if anyone has a recipe for Pfeffernuss, please email it to me, chefemily@sharpenhot.com. I am looking for a lot of spice in the cookie and a nice crackle on the crust, like a sugar crust, and then some powdered sugar on the outside. These are the only three things I need out of this cookie. We will be taking the week off between Christmas and New Year's, and then coming back on January 6th with resident clean person Jolie Kerr, who is the author of My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag and Other Questions You Can't Ask Martha, and columnist at Deadspin. So everyone, if you haven't already become a member, go over to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Up to $7,500 this week only. Fairway Market will match your donation. And if you are around the Brooklyn area tomorrow night, we are having our annual holiday party at Tandem. Please come out and join us from 6 to 10 p.m. And then after that, Full Service Radio will take over. And Jack, my wonderful engineer, will be spinning until 4 in the morning. I will not be there that late, but I'll be there for the first half, and we would love to see you all out there. More details on the Facebook page for Heritage Radio Network. Until next week, everybody, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.